This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Wong Xiaoning and Roshan Kunnison beaming in from an undisclosed location in the mysterious Petaling Jaya. It has just gone past 7:36 in the morning. It's Tuesday, the 8th of December, and in about half an hour, we're going to have the breakfast grill. Well, where I'll be speaking to one of the winners in this COVID-19 era. And yes, there are some businesses which have survived and in fact thrive, while many others have been decimated by the pandemic. So one of the winners, of course, is the global logistic industry. Now, they've seen exponential growth as e-commerce exploded and more companies start digitizing. So today, I'm going to speak to John Pearson, global CEO of DHL Express, about how this company has navigated the pandemic, its strategy for expanding market share amidst stiff competition. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be an interesting conversation. And I'm, of course, also going to ask him, how is he going to participate in distributing the vaccines, which is the one thing the whole world needs? Tune in for that. That's going to be happening after the 8:05 news bulletin. In the meantime, let's talk about Singapore, our friendly neighbours down south, because last week, Singapore awarded licences for its first digital banks.
Yes, most notably, a Grab Singtel venture won a full license, as did internet platform company C Limited. The wholesale licenses were awarded to Ant Group and a consortium comprising of China's Greenland Financial Holding Group. Digital banks will likely gain more and more prominence as Southeast Asia and the rest of the world moves increasingly towards an internet economy. In fact, the Bain Google Temasek report estimated that more than 70% of the adult population in Southeast Asia is either underbanked or unbanked, and yet an estimated 70% of the region's population now has access to the internet. So I think this is that key demographic when it comes to the digital banking environment.
So, of course, the big question is, what can we expect from digital banks and what will this mean for the traditional players? So to help us answer this, we are speaking this morning to Varun Mittal, Global Emerging Markets FinTech Leader at EY. Now, how much of a shakeup will this actually be for the banking sector in Singapore? What kind of disruption do you think this will really bring?
See, the thing is, all these bank licenses will not go live till March 22. Because they get a license in the next couple of weeks and then they have another 12 months to go live. So the earliest, the first products are early 22. And on day one, all the products will not go live. So a lot of, I would say there is a lot of hype around that, but it's the road is still down and you can expect the existing banks to not wait. They will have another one and a half years to push through it and strengthen their propositions. But yes, will there be more competition? Will there be more customer expectations on experience, capabilities, access to products? That will increase, but nothing will shake up in next 6 months.
So what do you think the digital banks in Singapore will do differently from the current incumbents though?
So the key part is the incumbents were always built on differential cost of servicing a customer. You are below $300,000 worth, you are normal. Then you are premier or some premier or something or plus, then you are private. And because then you get different kind of branch access, different kind of RM access. So it was a, I would say a class system. The existing banking is a caste system, class system kind of banking. And what the newer players are looking at is, they are looking at democratized access because the consumers are looking at my video streaming app, same as you, my phone, same as you, my ride-hailing app, same, e-commerce app, same. Why should my banking experience be different? Why should the products I have access to be different? So that democratization of access where all of, when they're starting with a very large distribution. So whether you look at a taxi hailing company or an e-commerce company, they don't differentiate whether you're rich or you're poor. You are buying something, you're putting a payment instrument on file. They treat everybody in the same way. So just because you're rich, you don't get a special treatment. Yes, you are a premium customer, like a prime or something, that's different. So that psychological, that behavioral shift is something which is unique.
But Varun, what are some of the changes these digital banks will face in a very monopolistic, crowded market like Singapore? Do you expect them to perhaps to attract that market share to kind of offer attractive deposit rates, for example? Will there be price wars?
I do not foresee price wars because MAS initially said that value disruptive competition is not encouraged. And that's a soft way of conveying a lot. There are a lot of segments which are extremely unserved, even in Singapore. So for example, Singapore has about 340,000 foreign maids, another 350,000 foreign construction workers, and a growing population of gig economy, another 400,000 gig economy. And from a Malaysian context, the number may look small, but for Singapore with a 5.4 million population, if you have 1.2, 1.3 million people in these underserved segments, that's a significant piece.
And do you expect the incumbent banks to react though? Because some of them, for example, like DBS, they've spent a lot of money, capex, on digitalizing their offerings. So what more do you expect from them, from the likes of OCBC, DBS, and even UOB?
See, the premise is all of them would react for sure. The way they would react will be different. So for example, one approach of reacting is acknowledging that this is a long tail of the market and it's okay for the digital banks to serve them, because the existing banks cost to service a specific number. So there may be parts of segments, they will say these segments are, we are happy for them to be served by the digital banks. While there are other segments which they would want to fiercely compete, and they would double down, they would put more digitization, they would remove whatever existing paperwork is there, remove the thresholds for product access. Like for example, normally they would say discretionary asset portfolio, unless you have less than $2 million, you can't come. They may lower those thresholds because somebody who's starting from zero will open a lot of those thresholds to the new customers to attract them, saying this access A, B, C cannot give you, I will give you the same access at 100,000 minimum. So the opening of access is something which I expect to happen in short term for a lot of capabilities.
And I want to bring this conversation back to Malaysia, right? Does this then tell you anything in terms of who might be expected to win these digital banking licenses in Malaysia eventually?
See, one thing, if you look at slight trends between, let's say, Singapore and some of the other markets, the way they gave the licenses for the full banks, the part was to focus on people who already had significant amount of distribution. What would that mean is they would have to spend less on creating a brand. They would have to spend less on customer acquisition. They already have customers either through a wallet or through different capabilities. And I expect something like that to continue in other markets, where companies which have digital distribution will have some precedence. And from a regulator's perspective, they would have some sense of comfort. The other part would be ensuring you have enough capital. Because at least in Singapore, they said the same capital. Malaysia has put the capital thresholds to be slightly lower. But I would expect regulator to see that you need to have this capital on the day you apply. Don't tell me you apply, you get a license, then you go to market to raise capital. So the rent seeker mentality is something which I don't think even BNM would encourage. You need to have that capital. It's a sensitive industry. Bring that before you apply, not after.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Varun Mittal of EY speaking to us from Singapore, giving us his views on the digital banking licenses winners and what we can expect going forward. What were your key takeaways, Roshan?
I particularly liked how he emphasized the fact that it's different customer segments, right? When you take a look at it, I think to paraphrase him, when we talk about how the incumbents could react, I think long story short is, all right, you can take this segment of the market. We're not going to fight you there because of the customer cost, essentially. But you come for this market and we will fight you. I think that's basically going to be the story. You go for the ones that don't have access. All right, fine. No worries. You stay there. Come to our market where it's a more lucrative segment, the more high net worth individuals, and that's where you're going to start seeing competition.
Yeah, but my big question is, who's going to be profitable and when, right? Because all these ventures, right? I mean, even Grab to today, I don't think is making a profit, right? So how much money is this all going to... What's the cash burn going to be like for digital banks as they fight for competition? I think things that we're going to follow very, very closely. But up next, we'll be speaking to Zakia Jaffa, who's the Deputy Secretary General of Policy at the Ministry of Finance, on the Fitch downgrade of Malaysia's ratings. Stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.